What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey, guys. Welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Thank you guys for showing up. We're going to keep bringing it. If you have seen the news recently, the ACT Dental BPA community has joined with the SmileSource community. Now, you might be thinking, what is this all about? Well, there's some amazing people in both communities, and I'm going to do my best to bring their stories to you, some insight to help you with your journey. And today is a great one. I have a new friend. His name is Dr. Lewis Kaufman, and he shares his journey. And it's wild, an unconventional journey from Burger King to dental school. Yes, I did say that. And how he did it and what happened. So here it is. Please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. I love my job. You know why? Because I get to talk to great people in the industry and learn about how they created a better practice and a better life. And that's what this podcast is all about. So as we're growing, it's amazing because we put the ACT Dental and the SmileSource community together, meeting a lot of people, getting to hear their stories. And so today you're going to hear an amazing story from an amazing dentist. It's not too far from me. His name's Dr. Lewis Kaufman. It's going to take us on a journey. Lewis, thanks for being here, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Kirk. Good to be here.
Yeah. Now, you and I know each other. We've chatted a few times. But I want to ask you so much. I want you to take us on this crazy journey you've been on. And let's go way back. Like, how did you get here? Take us back to the beginning of your story.
Well, my story, I mean, I don't go all the way back, but I've always been an entrepreneur. Mindset, been working since I was single digits, 9 years old, lawnmower business, working around the neighborhoods, just trying to hustle, you know, make money, car detailing, always had a job, all through school. My road initially led me into the business realm. I knew I wanted to own restaurants, at least that's what I thought I wanted to do. That's when I was 18, so I got did my BA, got my MBA, and went to work for Burger King Corporation. And they were owned by Pillsbury Chart House at the time. I was a local franchisee.
Yeah.
And I worked for them for a few years, and I was like, man, this is not for me. The hours are grueling, horrible. I was turning around stores, and I was making them big money. Sometimes I was firing entire teams, retraining entire teams. And, you know, building profits, building revenue, and then on to the next store. And I was like, my mind didn't feel challenged enough. I just felt worn out. And I felt like I was meant to do more with my life. So I thought about medicine.
Wait, go back to Burger King. So, okay. Like, I know a little bit about your story. Like, they did you a favor one time. And it was kind of a setback, but you turned that into an opportunity. Talk about that.
So when I was at the last restaurant I was serving, I'd already been thinking about changing careers. One morning I walked into the restaurant and the safe deposit was open. So those days, everything was cash. I mean, once in a while you ran a credit card, but it was manual sliders. You remember those, Kirk?
Right.
And safe deposit's missing. Called up my boss. He told me and the other restaurant managers to come in for a lie detector test. I said, sure, I got nothing to hide. Go in, take the lie detector test, passed it, obviously. And I got back to the restaurant. I called my boss and I said to him, keys are on the desk. I'm done. I'm out of here. Good luck. And at that point, I knew I was on going to be on a different path. And I was thinking medicine, did the math. That was going to be probably 14 years. I knew I'd want to go into surgery. So I thought, dentistry, did well for your dad.
Yeah.
What would it do for you? Well, I'm not talking to him because, you know, real biased opinion.
Right.
So I talked to a bunch of guys he knew. And the advice I got was specialize or go work for him after dental school.
Yeah.
But I had to go back to school because I had Bachelor of Arts degrees.
Okay.
All my science courses.
Let me ask you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're about 27, 28 years old at this time. To go back to school, how hard was that?
That was brutal. I mean, I was older than most of my classmates. I'm seeing a bunch of my, you know, friends from growing up in high school, getting out with their lives, getting married. It's like, oh, what am I doing going back to school? And I was going to two schools. I was going to two colleges to get my requirements so I could complete everything in a year and apply to dental school. So traveling between a community college and a Northeastern Illinois University. So that was, you just brought back, you know, memories. Running from parking lots to classrooms and then leaving and going back to the other school.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you, buddy. It took me 8 years to get my undergrad, and I don't have a doctorate, so it's okay. You know, we're all in the same boat. You, and you went to U of I, you know, for dental school, right?
Sure did. Sure okay. did.
I know, and again, I know a little bit about your story. Dental school was not easy for you. Talk about that.
Okay. So dental school, I struggled that first year because I was so weak in the sciences. And about two-thirds of the way through, the dean of the dental school kind of sought me out, and he asked me to come in for a meeting. So he took me down to his office, and he told me, well, you're going to be meeting with all the department heads to discuss your future in dental school. I was like, okay. Kind of knew in the back of my head something like this was probably going to be in the pipeline. And he brought me into this big room, big oval table. All the department heads are sitting there, and they all had something really very constructive to say. And then they asked me for my feedback, and I told them, look, yeah, I know I'm struggling. And I said, because my background was business, and I took my sciences. The dean of the dental school basically spoke up and said, look, I've heard enough. Kaufman will give you a chance, and you can finish this year, but you got to restart dental school next year.
That's crazy.
What do you want to do? I had to make a decision right then and there. I wasn't married, had no kids. The only person I was responsible for was me. Okay, I've made all these other changes. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to go for it. And that's what I did.
Yeah. 5 years was probably brutal. Now, did you have to go back and do all the course? Like how, what did
yeah, the... You know, gross anatomy again, histology again, wow. Any of the hands-on courses you were doing the first year, you were doing everything. There was no, you know, oh, you took that once, well, you don't have to. No, you had to go through it all again.
Okay.
You had to matriculate, if you will, with your peers.
Okay, so you finish at U of I. Now, are you originally from the Chicago area? Like,
yes, I grew up on the north side of Chicago in a suburb called Skokie.
Okay,
so I grew up. I commuted. I didn't live on campus. I had a condo in the Rogers Park area at that time, so I drove every day to school.
Okay,
so it allowed me to also work on the weekends.
Totally, totally. So you get out of dental school. Where do you go then?
It was really awesome. I got asked to work in the special needs clinic when I graduated. And I worked one day a week in the special needs clinic and then 5 days a week for my father. And I also got asked, but I turned it down, was to go into oral surgery by the head of the department. So here was this kid who comes in, struggles his first year, and then being sought after. And I thought, that's pretty awesome. But I loved working with my hands. I always spent extra time in oral surgery.
Yeah.
Always spent extra time in perio. I had good mentors. I finished most of my requirements by the middle of my fourth year of dental school. So I had to start giving cases to, you know, the juniors that were behind us, the third years.
Yeah. What was the real reason you decided no on oral surgery? Just, you know.
I was like, I've had enough. I've had enough school.
Yeah.
I want to be done. I want to start moving on with my life. I've made these changes. thank you for asking me. I appreciate it. And I don't regret that decision whatsoever.
Yeah. So you work for your dad doing special needs. Where's the next stop?
Special needs at the dental school. And I said, well, that's enough. I did 5 days a week then with my dad.
Okay.
Then what starts happening is you start taking continuing education because you want to learn more about your profession and which way to go. I also did Dawson for 2 years when I got out of dental school.
Awesome.
Because I had no clue about occlusion. And I mean, that really impacted my career as well. Because I was just lost on it. Probably like a lot of people when they graduate dental school.
Yeah.
So I started going to lectures and I'm hearing different people lecture. I'm like, yeah, I might be able to do that someday. I said, that looks like fun. So I started getting involved with minimal prep veneers.
Okay.
And the big ones at that time was Denmat. And then they started branding themselves as Lumineers. And they had a program called the LSDP at that time. It was Lumineer Smile Discovery Program. Well, as I was accelerating in the amount of veneers I was doing in my office, and I was close to the people, some of the people at Denmat, my sales rep at the time, and she introduced me to other people at Denmat. And before I know it, I was invited to Las Vegas to their Destination Education Program, which was a 2-day event. It was the biggest in the industry at the time. Great education, a lot of fun. They said, you got 10 minutes to give a presentation on the LSDP program. I said, great. I can do this. I've given some talks before college. I go into this room, I go up to this podium, and I look out. There must have been 1,500, 2,000 people there.
Yeah.
And I start, and my throat goes completely dry. I'm parched. I turn to a buddy of mine, Rob, and I said, I didn't need water. I mean, I'm just like, couldn't get anything out. Took my sip of water. Did my presentation. Couldn't get off the podium fast enough. I said, this is not for me. I don't want to do it. And then people are telling me, you did a great job. I even got an applause. I was like, oh. This is really cool. This is fun. Got invited to Santa Maria to meet with Bob Ibsen, who is the owner of Denmat. And before I know it, they had me lecturing, teaching veneers, lumineers. And I did that for many, many years. At one point, we were every other weekend on the road giving 2-day courses, teaching minimum invasive preparations, no prep at the time. Then we got into more minimally invasive. Modified prep, smile design, all of it. And all the background and education that I had taken personally was allowed me to really share that information really well with colleagues.
Yeah. Now you own your practice. When did you purchase a practice?
So I purchased the practice from my father.
Okay.
We went to practice together. I did get a good deal on it. I'll be upfront on that. I'm not going to say how much, obviously.
Right.
But that was about 20 years ago, and I've been practicing a little over 30 now.
Okay. Describe the style of practice. If I've never seen it, how would you describe it?
Style of practice at that time when I purchased, we were about 6 ops, open bay, 4 open bay, 2 closed office rooms, if you will.
Okay.
No technology. Everything was, dipping x-rays, handwritten notes, no computers. At that time, I think just PVS in a tube had just come out. I think when I graduated dental school, we were still mixing by hand. A lot of HMOs, some traditional insurance. PPOs were just getting started at that time. We had some fee for service. No Medicare, nothing like that was coming in, or no Medicaid. And I knew things, we had to change. We had to start, looking to the future. Let's stop hand mixing. Let's start doing PVS in a gun. Scanners I hadn't started with at that point yet, but like zero technology. Plus it was dated. It had the wood paneling up. It had, just that look. I was like, okay. And I was a guy who knew how to clean up restaurants, make those look well in the past. I was like, presentation and appearances are huge. Cleanly, and the office was clean, don't mind you, but it looked like it was right out of the 1960s.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we changed it. We kept the office running. Believe it or not, we closed down sections at the time. Had the contractor putting up drywall and plastering, redoing everything, new floors. But my dad was still practicing.
Yeah.
So we didn't computerize the operatories yet. We started computerizing all the billing and accounts receivable, accounts payable. Great. My dad finally hung it up. It was like, boom, you know, I got the whole office computerized, put cone beam in, digital x-rays. I brought it up to where it needed to be at that point in time.
Yeah.
So that was, it was about 15 years ago, I think I put the cone beam in the office. So I was a really early adopter for a general dentist on the cone beam side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So over the last 20 years, a lot of HMOs, PPOs, when they're started, how's it evolved? How's it different now? How'd you describe it today?
Today, three PPO plans, no HMO, fee for service.
Yeah.
So we got, it's a nice mix of patients. Fee for service probably is about 40% of the business.
Okay.
Mind you, I practice in Chicago's Hyde Park neighborhood. So you got a lot of working class, you got a lot of people who depend on insurance. And that's why I've kept the PPOs currently. But when I joined, there was 18 HMO plans.
Wow.
And at one point, I think we were involved in 10 or 12 PPOs.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just, you know, you listen to educators, you know, like yourself and Gary Takis.
Yep.
And, you know, you have conversations, you listen, you hear, and just slowly started weeding out the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Keep the ones that are paying me well, the ones that are working. And now we have a practice that I have three full-time hygienists. I have my associate, me. I've had a periodontist on and off over the years. I go in 3 or 4 days a week now. Typically, I try to keep it to three.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
What are some of the best business decisions you made when you look back at your career? Like pivotal decisions, you're like, I'm so glad I did that. Wow.
Continuing education has always played a strong part in my life. I always wanted to get to the FAGD. I want to get my master's. You know, still trying to knock away at that in the academy. That's always been pivotal. Going to Dawson for a couple of years, that was huge. That really grounded me. The basis of preventing, you know, catastrophic failures of rebuilding a dentition.
Yeah.
The other one was putting in cone beam into the office 15 years ago. That was huge. I was able to see so much more, as we all know, who's using it now, and do so much more. When I started placing implants, I mean, I had been restoring implants, and then I started placing them. That was huge. I had a strong oral surgery background, so that helped. You know, I would say that the cone beam, and then I started actually in-office milling only 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That was another great decision. Yeah. Elderly patients, you want to tell them to come back? No. I'm happy to sit in the chair, doc.
Yeah.
So, you know, even if they're there a couple hours, big deal, they're fine. They don't want to come back and see you.
Yeah.
If they can avoid it. So that was a great decision.
Yeah. A lot of people listening right now trying to figure out how to get more time, you know, and you and I can talk about this as a favorite subject, but like how, Lewis, give us a peek inside a week of your life. How in the world, if I'm a young dentist listening to this, how did you get to 3 days? And what's a week in your life look like?
A week in my life now, and I'm just laughing because I learned along the way you have to become intentional in terms of planning your life as best as you can. I mean, there's things we just can't control, but time off, time away from the office,
right?
Going to continuing education, blocking time, making time for family. But I knew in the early years I had to take the CE, and I had to grind. I really had to grind it out by putting in 4 full days or 5 full days a week, being available to patients, an emergency calls, you have them come over right away. If they can't come over right away, it's not a true emergency.
Right.
If a patient calls up and says they're running a little bit late, you know, work with them if you have to get them in the door. Being flexible. I see so many people get so rigid, and you got to understand, it's a human being sitting in your dental chair. You're not a car mechanic. You're treating a fellow human. That really helped me. In terms of my time and productivity, always having extra chairs. At one point, I had three or four chairs going. I'm not prepping crowns in every chair, but can I deliver a denture? Can I adjust a denture in one of those chairs? Yes. Can I get an emergency in one of those chairs? Because my assistant's going to be doing most of the work. I just have to go in there and do the diagnosis and see if I can treat same day. That allowed, so scheduling correctly and protecting your time, like blocking time. I taught my team, you know, let's grind it out in the morning for production as much as possible, early afternoon if we need to do some production, and new patients a little bit later in the day. If I was going to be doing veneer case deliveries, I would do that usually towards the end of the week in the morning time. Implant surgeries, I had a day set aside for doing the implant cases. So it was being very intentional in the planning of the time. Now, I mean, I can go in, I can knock out a day $15,000, $20,000. And that's not to brag,
right?
But it's because I was intentional in how I went about building the schedule. Do I have days that come up where it's only a few thousand or 5,000? Yeah, but if I'm there, I want to make sure I'm serving my patients, getting the people in, make sure I'm providing the best diagnostics I can, diagnosing what I can, and talking to the patients about what they need.
Yeah, I love it. You and I share a passion. We're very connected in the dental community. You talk to a lot of dentists out there. You look at this next generation. The thing I love about dentistry is it's very noble. We're always caring for, like, looking out for the next generation. As you talk to these younger practitioners, what do you think the biggest challenge they have is for the road ahead?
The biggest challenge, I think, for the young dentist coming out right now, and it's no surprise, is that financial burden they have when they graduate. But don't let that define what it's going to look like 10 years out. I think if my goal is, if I was that young dentist, there's two things. One, I'd be running really lean on my spending, my expenses. I'd be trying to generate as much revenue as possible, pay down those loans as quick as possible. I wouldn't be thinking about fancy cars. I wouldn't be thinking about fancy vacations. I would just want to get those loans taken care of. Take continuing education so you can be doing more implants. Learn the endo. And when I told this to a young man who entered dental school 3 years ago who worked for me, he's like, I have no money. He goes, how am I going to pay for all this? I said, join the military. I said, join the military. You're going to get some great experience there. You're going to get your loans paid off. And before you know it, in 5 or 6 years, you're loan free.
Mm-hmm.
Go work for the Indian Health Service. I had a buddy who did that I graduated with. There's ways to get those loans paid off. I tell you, but you got to be willing to put in the grind. You got to be willing to put in those hours early in your career to pay off the loans and then just keep generating that income and get a good mentor to look out for you, somebody to talk to, join study clubs.
Yeah.
One of the things about SmileSource, I'll go there really quick. And we have a whole mix of dentists from younger to old guys like me. And there's a free sharing of information, of ideas exchanged. And, you know, a younger dentist can ask an older dentist who's, I guarantee you they've been through it. They've experienced it. And they've come across those hurdles and those challenges.
Yeah. So go back to that. So part of the reason you and I are together on this journey is, you know, this concept called SmileSource. But if I'm an outsider, give us a little bit of the history of SmileSource. What is it? You know, and some people, and I'll go there too. Some people are like, well, that's just a GP. I'm like, no, it's not. Give us some perspective in the history that you've had.
Okay. My history with SmileSource joined me 10 years ago this October.
Okay.
And at that time, I think I was office maybe 170 or so. I know I was under two. I was under the two or right around 200.
Right.
And before I know it, I'm getting asked to be an administrator. That's what we were called at that time. And now they call me an ambassador. I'm still trying to figure out which country.
Yeah.
And at that time, there was about 14 of us when I joined, administrators. Now I don't even know how many we have. I think we have maybe 50, maybe 60. You'd probably know better than me, Kirk.
Right.
But this community grew from a vision, no pun intended, from a company called Vision Source, who took, you know, from the optometry side and facing the same struggles that dentistry and medicine were facing. And that's being, you know, pushed and things being tightened. And what can we do to together as private practitioners to continue growing and succeeding and not being under the ruled hand of private equity?
Right.
And I've seen this group grow from a community of people who I can pick up a phone to any of these colleagues in SmileSource, get an answer if I needed help, bounce something off of them. I can ask a question about continuing education. What's worth, you know, what's worth taking, what's not. I can talk to them about maybe a vendor I'm seeing on SmileSource, somebody new that they've used. Has it worked for you? What are the pros? What are the cons for it? Freely shared information. When we come together once a year at the SmileSource Exchange, which is now this much bigger event,
mm-hmm.
with all these vendors and very good food and fantastic continuing education over a course of about 3 days, you learn so much. And it's not just always in the classroom. We all know who's been doing it long enough. You learn a lot just from sitting at a table talking to somebody about what they're doing and how they're succeeding. So it's a lot of like-minded dentists. And you see, the dentists in this group, you know, you got people with their fellowships. You have people who just who teach. You know, people would know them in the dental industry. You'd see them out there. It's people who really care about protecting the private practice of dentistry, meaning that you don't have to go that road to a DSO. You don't have to go to the Heartlands of the world. There are other ways. I mean, there's room for both. There's so many dentists out there.
Right.
And it, like you said, it's a noble profession. And these students who went into it, this young dentist who went into it, you know, they want that independence. They don't want to be accountable to a boss.
Right.
They want to have that passion of running a practice and defining what their own hours are.
Yeah, absolutely. You used a key word there called passion. I actually wrote it down before you even said it. You know, I want to know about this too, because I'm relatively new to combining these two communities. We got the Act Dental BPA community and the SmileSource community. Now, I'll just go right there. Like, I heard you guys were a very passionate group. I'm like, okay, I get that. But nobody's more passionate than us. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. These guys and gals are on fire. Where did this passion come from? How's it created? Like, they are crazy passionate about preserving independent practice. Where did that come from? And how does that stay so strong?
I think it has become very organic.
Okay.
That passion. I can't say, you know, somebody put it in there. I'd say everybody who's a part of SmileSource brings that passion of wanting to preserve private practice. Because they like calling their own shots. They like running their own practice. They like determining their own hours. They don't want to be defined by financiers or private equity telling them how many patients you have to see. What do you have to do? What do you have to get to go through? They're not living their life by quotas.
Right.
Or what they're producing. I think these are people who really, really care about how that human, that fellow human in that dental chair, the type of service that they can provide them. They're passionate about that. And I also think they really care about their teams.
Right.
You know, I have team members, and I'm just, you know, I'm tooting my own horn. I got team members, she's been practicing longer than me, 40 years as a hygienist. I have another, my head dental assistant, 25 years. Another dentist, 15. Another hygienist, 25. I mean, my people stay, but I treat them well, and I love them, and I like them. But they have that same passion. They want to help. They want to succeed. And when you look around SmileSource docs, they really care.
Right.
I'm not saying these other dogs don't care, but it seems like we just have like a more of an invested interest. And I think anybody who's has a private practitioner, private practice, I think they have that in them.
Right.
You can tell they really care. There's so many great dentists out there. Oh my gosh, there are so many phenomenal dentists. I say I'm a good dentist. Some things I do great. Some things, you know, I wish I could do a little bit better. But I think I'm a good dentist. There's some amazing dentists out there.
I totally agree. Every time I turn the corner, I'm like, I've never heard of this. This is so cool. Not only like the passion, but the creativity, the vulnerability is very powerful. I want you to explain this because I get these questions all the time. You've been doing this way longer than me. So it was started with the concept of the GPO. I want you to explain what a GPO is. And then the tagline for a long time was come for the savings, stay for the community. Now that's a very unique proposition in the marketplace. Just tell our listeners, what does that mean to you? And like, what has it meant to your journey?
So in Arizona, I never thought of us as like a GPO.
Right.
I think outside worlds defined us as that. That's been a huge benefit.
And what does GPO, I know what it stands for.
Group practice, buying group organization.
Group purchasing organization, yeah.
Right, group purchasing. I mean, I get so stuck on all these little names. So again, the group purchasing.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, you get that benefit.
Right.
Awesome. Wonderful. Saved you a lot of money. Putting money in your pocket. But yeah, the savings are great, but the community and the relationships that I have built, vendors, fellow dentists, over the last 10 years is fantastic. I feel like, you know, when I come to these meetings, like, you know, it's another family.
Yeah.
You know, I think I recently told you, we just got married.
Yes. Congratulations, buddy.
You and I, but yeah. Jill and I. And, you know, I'm thinking of all these people in this group that I wanted to invite. And I'm like, okay, we're trying to keep it to a moderately sized wedding, small. And I couldn't invite everybody I wanted to. But I was able to invite a few close friends who could make it. And I got to tell you, it was so special having these guys there, because these are guys I've been in the trenches with, meetings with, spent time with, gotten to know really well, love them like family, care about them. That's cool. To me, that was really felt so heartfelt inside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's part of the passion for me.
Yeah.
It's just a really great group of people who want to succeed and don't want to be taken over by a corporate entity. I mean, I don't think private practice is going anywhere. I think it's here to stay. It's going to be, won't be as many, big deal. Mm-hmm. We'll be a niche market for people who are seeking us out, who want that type of specialty care.
Yeah, totally agree. There'll be a big market for private practice. I feel very strongly about that. If you know anyone who's heavy in the big group practice arena, they will tell you the same thing. There's always going to be a strong market for that. And there's always challenges that come on the other side of the fence. I want you to go back to this. So, Lewis, I mean, being an entrepreneur, speak to this. It's hard and you can't do this on your own. You need the help of a great team. You got to surround yourself with other people that are doing similar things. Like, talk about the value of being around other entrepreneurs that are like, I've been through that. That's happened to me type of a thing.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's like all of guys that, you know, like on the Smile Source Fireside Chat that Dr. Mike Maroon puts on every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Make them when I can, miss some. But we're the same age. Mike might be a year younger than me. But he's been practicing 8 or 9 years more. So if I've got a question, I'm going to ask him.
What's
I'm going to ask a guy who's been doing it a little bit longer, because I know I might be able to get that answer.
Yeah.
But when the young guys start talking, I start listening because I want to hear what's going on there, because one, they're faster, they're smarter about, you know, a lot of the tech that's going on out there. And to me, what a great way to learn.
Right.
Because you have these other colleagues to bounce it off of. I don't know if I answered your question completely there.
Totally. Totally. You know, I think, first of all, it's always great to share experience and learn from somebody who's way ahead of you. And my dad always says, it's like, you're going to be the average of the five people you hang around with. So pick good friends that challenge. I think as adults, every year, you got to say, who am I around? And what are they doing to me? You got to pick some tough friends. I like younger. I mean, it does. Age is not relevant to me, but I like people who challenge the heck out of me. And then you're doing, like, making a bigger impact. Like, that's, how did you do that?
They make you think.
Yeah.
They make you think that because they do challenge you.
Right.
And that's, I like that.
I do too.
I want somebody who's, I like being in the room with somebody who's smarter. It can offer different perspectives and different ideas because I want to learn from that individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, you become a sponge. It's like, you know, I like reading, you know, like murder mysteries and books and all. Because you pick up information. I like picking up new hobbies sometimes because you learn and you challenge the mind, especially as you get older. I'm 63 now. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of ancient in the dental world, but you got to keep challenging your mind.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned exchange. I have never been. I'm going this year. I'm pumped. If somebody's never been, why should I go? What happens? Like, tell me why I should go.
One, you should go to take it all in and experience it.
Right.
The continuing education lineup this year, and I've been blown away in the past by the education lineup. This looks like it's going to be second to none in terms of the speakers and what they have put together. You don't have to pay for your food unless you choose to go out.
All
the meals are going to be provided for you.
Yep.
If you are somebody who consumes alcohol, that will be provided for you as well. Feel free to stay sober, whatever works for you. Great community, great meeting each other. Imagine a trade show with 40 or 50 vendors, may even be more now, that you can handle equipment, you can use it, you can ask questions, you get feedback from people who are already using these vendors. Because a lot of the vendors, when we order in my office or we get supplies or equipment, I stick to my SmileSource vendors, I'd say 95%. What a great way to give a colleague feedback on something that you've already used.
Yeah.
Or if you haven't used, get feedback from them.
Yeah, and why do you do that? Why do you stick to it 95%? What's the rationale for you?
Well, I have because it saved me money, or or rebate money or lab cost money. Running a dental practice, and you alluded this to a little bit, is a lot different today than it was 30 years ago, even 10 years ago, because the costs have escalated. Labor costs are so high, product material costs are gone up so much. So if I can have a way to squeeze that and save some money, I'm going to do that. It's like, if you can put an extra procedure in, if you can do, if you can diagnose night guards or perioprotector during the course of the day, you're going to add to that bottom line. You're going to fight it. So if I'm saving money on what I'm already purchasing, then translating to my bottom line, if I've increased my production, your profit's going to increase.
Yeah.
Can't help.
Amen, brother. Amen. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're curious and you're open to like SmileSource or the exchange, I'm going to encourage you to go. You can flip up to the show notes. You're going to see a link. Check it out. Lewis and I will be there. And there's over 600 people registered as of today and keeps growing. It's crazy. So it's amazing the inertia that's been behind this for so many years. So I'm crazy excited to be there. And we want you guys all to be there. Now, I do have a couple other questions. Give me the next. We've heard these chapters. Lewis, at this stage in the game, what's the next chapter for you? What's on the road ahead? It's anyone's guess. Come on.
So, Lewis Kaufman, 3.0, 4.0.
Whatever. Yes.
I've been getting asked about retirement. What is that going to look like? I don't think I'll ever fully retire from being in the dental industry. Mm-hmm. I still want to play a role and still be an influencer and a contributor and an educator and a writer. I think eventually I'll find the right person to purchase my practice, private person. I've looked at the DSO route. I did that about 5 years ago, and I ran fast as I could from it. So I think you'll see me, you know, not being chair side to the degree that I am now, which I know is not a lot, 3 to 4 days, and I vacation a lot as well. But I want to be writing. I want to be doing keynote addresses. I got a lot of stories in me of events and things that have taken place in my dental career and my life. I want to be able to bring that and help the younger dentists learn more, inspire, teach. I know it's easy to get down and about being in this industry because it's demanding. It's a very demanding profession. It's so important to take care of ourselves. So I hope to be able to offer some of that messaging along the way and do what I can to keep growing Smile Source and ACT for future generations.
Yeah, awesome, brother. Well, I'm so grateful, number one, for you coming on and sharing your story. Give our listeners some final thoughts before we wrap up, if somebody's been listening.
My biggest final thought would be look ahead at the next year.
Yeah.
Think about what you want to accomplish, what you want to do. Set goals for yourself and block out time to live your life. I would say, you know, if you can get a week, a quarter away from your office, do it. If you are married and you have kids, make sure you're making time for them. The time's going to go fast. It's quick. When I say my son just turned 29, the 16th of this month, I'm like, wow, that happened like that.
Yeah.
We had a lot of great times together, but there was times that, you know, I wasn't with them, with my kids. Make sure you make time for exercise, meditation, reading, put the phones away, put the, no offense to the podcasts out there, turn it all off.
Yeah.
You know, go take a walk in nature. Surround yourself with the people you care about. Don't waste your time with the ones who are causing a negative effect in your life and recognize it. A book I read a long time ago was by Walter Payton, an ex-running back for the Chicago Bears, for anybody who doesn't know that, and Matt Sui.
Okay.
And one of the biggest takeaways, and Walter died in his 30s, was tomorrow is guaranteed to no one. And it isn't. All we got is here and now. What are we going to do with it? How are we going to impact it? It's your life. You lead it what's best for you and your family.
Yeah. Very well said, Lewis. Thank you, brother.
You're welcome, man.
Really appreciate you. Sure. So there you have it from the man himself. So Lewis, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening. I love sharing great stories from people who have done a lot of amazing things in dentistry, and we're going to keep bringing them. So with over 900 episodes, we got 9,000 more to help you create a better practice and better life. If you haven't signed up for Exchange, make sure you sign up for Exchange. If you're curious about what a GPO is, check it out. I promise you, you'll love it. And join the community and surround yourself with like-minded people so you think better, just like Lewis shared. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the best practices show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.